Blog Talk Radio.
You need to get it, Pete don't wanna love you the right way, he ain't gonna. It ain't where he's at, it's where he wanna be. Yeah.
Broadcasting live from NYC. What's good, people? It's your man, S-Dot. It is our duty, it is our responsibility as not just people of color, but as citizens of humanity. The objective is to inspire proactive people to productive activities. What's good, people? It's your man, S-Dot. My commitment, first and foremost, is to the restoration and rebuilding of the black family. Black on black love. What's good, people? It's your man, S-Dot. This is why it's important that we've got to get out of the window and start looking in the mirror. Black love is not a passive response. It is a declaration of warfare against those who desire to control and manipulate black men and black women and deprive them over their stewardship over the black family. What's good, people? It's your man, S-Dot. I remind you that this show is for constructive purposes only.
Welcome to the Black Love Experience, hosted by inspiring author S-Dot, exclusively presented by the S-Dot Files.
Today I begin a new life, for I am the master of my abilities, and today is going to be a great and beautiful day.
Pillows, goose down, $35.
P, you a buyer or a seller?
What? Videos, homie. Videos, DVDs, CDs, Masterpiece, Charles Angel.
Look at yourself.
How many millionaires you got on, bruh? I count at least three. Man, what the fuck are you talking about? P, look around, man. You see what I see? I see money. Look at my man over there selling t-shirts. Brother over there selling pies and papers. Cake man over there. Everybody moving, making money. Right? While we standing still being broke. I figured all this shit out, man. All this. This whole world moves forward through transactions. Commerce, nigga. The exchange of goods and services. All the real baller successful folks are sellers. And all the broke ass people playing catch up are buyers. I ain't trying to go out like that, Pete. I'm gonna be a seller. I'm gonna get my own business. Change the game.
Change is gonna happen. With or without you. Sooner or later, if you don't embrace it, you'll be replaced by it. Whoever you are, wherever you are, it's time to face that mirror and make the change. Today is a new day. Today half step as your imperfect finds the doors caught up in the everyday struggle. We ask you to continue to guide us and provide us right now relevant knowledge that speaks to our everyday trials and tribulations. We know we don't always get it right, but you know our heart. You know not just our desires, but also the motives behind our goals and aspirations. We're trying to come up out of our current situation and make a difference by being different.
Start a revolution. You know, whenever I'm threatened, I start shooting. Everybody head to Houston. I'm in Cuba, I love Cubans. This communist talk is so confusing. When it's from China, the very might of the music. Idiot win, the Bob Dylan, the rap music. You're an idiot, baby, you should become a student. Or you gon' learn today. Where the fuck have you been? The world's under new management. The new role model, fuck this Zoolander shit,
Y'all gon' learn today.
S-DOT has a get-it-done mindset when it comes to achieving. Sharing breakthrough strategies and overcoming solutions for everyday people, he is a communicator of change. S-DOT's most impressive credential is that he keeps it 100 and doesn't water down the whole truth and nothing but the truth. It is this refreshing forthrightness that enables him to speak with a right-now relevance to people from many walks of life. His can't stop, don't stop, won't stop attitude is infectious to those who have experienced this inspiring author, motivational speaker, and empowerment coach that is committed to helping those most in need succeed in love and life.
Yo, Chris, what you doing out of school?
Yo, man, they just suspended me, McBoo.
Word, they suspended the teacher?
Yeah, man, I'm getting so sick of this, man. They teaching us about nothing, man. You know what the bottom line is for black people out here? It's quite simple. You must learn.
You must learn. What's good, people? It's your man, S-Dot. Thank you to the caller who informed me that my mic was muted, so you didn't hear my intro. Let's rewind back. Today's episode is entitled Real Talk University on the Black Love Experience, and this is in response to the reality that the classroom isn't for everyone. Some of the most profound life lessons are taught and learned by everyday people in the struggle. So if you need to help in developing your hustle, today's episode is for you. On this episode of the Black Love Experience with S-Tot, I'll be sharing some of my hip-hop-inspired jewels of wisdom on how to get it, how you live it. We're going to check out some powerful insights from the book, The 50th Law by Hip-Hop Entrepreneur Curtis 50 Cent Jackson, and Robert Greene, who's the author of The 48 Laws of Power, Seduction, and the new book, The 6 Keys of Mastery. Plus, we're going to share a must-hear classic freestyle from some true school pioneers. That's right, you got to hear this. So thank each and every one of you for joining us this Thursday, April 18th, live from NYC. Calling number is 347-308-8527. For those of you who are listening on the archive, thank you for keeping it on the download on your iPod, your MP3 player, your desktop, wherever you may be checking this out, whatever mobile media device. I encourage you to share it with others, pass it along, post it on your Facebook, send out a tweet. So that being said, I wanted to jump right into the book. We got a lot of ground to cover. This is from the book, The 50th Law, by Curtis 50 Cent Jackson and Robert Greene, and this is from Chapter 1, which is entitled See Things for What They Are, Intense Realism. Let me say that title again. See Things for What They Are, Intense Realism. And it begins, this is life, new and strange. Strange because we fear it. New because we have kept our eyes turned from it. Men are men, and life is life, and we must deal with them as they are. And if we want to change them, we must deal with them in the form in which they exist. Richard Wright. As a boy, Curtis Jackson, a.k.a. 50 Cent, had one dominant drive, ambition. He wanted more than anything the very things that it seemed he could never have, money, freedom, and power. Looking out on the streets of Southside, Queens, where he grew up, Curtis saw a grim, depressing reality staring him in the face. He could go to school and take it seriously, but the kids who did that didn't seem to get very far. A life of low-paying jobs. He could turn to crime and make his money fast, but the ones who went for that either died young or spent much of their youth in prison. He could escape it all by taking drugs. Once you start down that path, there's no turning back. The only people he could see who led the life that he dreamed of were the hustlers, the drug dealers. They had the cars, the clothes, the lifestyle, the degree of power that matched his ambitions. And so by the age of 11, he had made the choice to follow that path and become the greatest hustler of them all. The further he got into it, however, the more he realized that the reality was much grimmer and harsher than he had imagined. The drug fiends, the customers were erratic and hard to figure out. The fellow hustlers were all fighting over the same limited number of corners, and they stabbed you in the back in an instant. The big-time dealers who ran the neighborhood could be violent and heavy-handed. If you did too well, someone would try to take what you had. The police were everywhere. One wrong move, you could land in prison. How could he possibly succeed amidst this chaos and avoid all of the inevitable dangers? It seemed impossible. One day, he was discussing the troublesome aspects of the game with an older hustler named Truth, who told him something he would never forget. Don't complain about the difficult circumstances, he said. In fact, the hard life of these streets is a blessing, if you know what you're doing. Because it is such a dangerous world, the hustler has to focus intensely on what's going on around him. He has to get a feel for the streets, who's troubled, where there might be some new opportunities. He has to see through all the bullshit people throw at him, their games, their lousy ideas. he has to look at himself, see his own limitations and stupidity. All of this sharpens the eye to a razor edge, making him a keen observer of everything. That's his power. The greatest danger we face, he told Curtis, is not the police or some nasty rival. It's the mind going soft. I've seen it happen to many a hustler, he said. If things go well, he starts thinking it will go on forever, and he takes his eyes off the streets. If things go bad, he starts wishing it were all different, and he comes up with some foolish scheme to get quick, easy money. Either way, he falls fast. Lose your grip on reality on these streets, and you might as well kill yourself. In the months to come, Curtis thought more and more about what truth had told him, and it began to sink in. He decided to transform Hustler's word into a kind of code that he would live by. He would trust no one. He would conceal his intentions, even from friends and partners, and no matter how high or low life for him, he would remain the supreme realist, keeping his hustler's eyes sharp and focused. Over the next few years, he learned to become one of the savviest hustlers in the neighborhood, operating a small crew that brought him good money. The future looked promising, but a moment's inattention got him trapped in a police sting, and at the age of 16, he was sentenced to 9 months in the Shock Rehabilitation Center in upstate New York. In this unfamiliar space and with time to reflect, suddenly the words of truth came back to him. This was not the time to get depressed or to dream, but to fix that hustler eye on himself and the world he lived in. See it as it is, no matter how ugly. He had unbridled ambition. He wanted real power, something he could build on. But no street hustler lasts that long. It's a young man's game. By the time hustlers reach their 20s, they slow down and something bad happens or they go scurrying into a low-paying job. And what blinds them to this reality is the money and the lifestyle of the moment. They think it will go on forever. They're too afraid to try something else. It doesn't matter how clever you are. There's a ceiling to how high you can rise. He had to wake up and get out while he was still young and his ambitions could be realized. He would not be afraid. And based on these reflections, he decided he would make a break into music. He would find a mentor, someone who could teach him the ropes. He would learn everything he could about music and the business. He would have no plan B. It was either make it there or die. Operating with a kind of desperate energy, he made the transition into music, carving a place for himself by creating a sound that was hard-driving and reflected the realities of the street. After a relentless mixtape campaign in New York, he got the attention of Eminem, and a record deal followed. Now he seemed to realize his childhood ambitions. He had money and power. People were nice to him. Everywhere he went, they flattered him, wanting to be part of the success. He could feel it happening. The good press, sycophantic followers, it was all starting to go to his head and dull his vision. On the surface, everything looked great. But what was the reality? Now, more than ever, he needed that clear, penetrating eye to see past all the hype and the glamour. The more he looked at it, the more he realized that the reality of the music business was as harsh as the streets. The executives who ran the labels were ruthless. They distracted you with charming words, but in fact, they could care less about your future as an artist. They wanted to suck you dry of every dollar they could get out of you. Once you were no longer so hot, you could find yourself slowly pushed to the side. Your decline would be all the more painful for having once tasted success. In truth, you were a pawn in their game. A corner hustler had more power and control over his future than a rapper did. And what about the business itself? The record sales were falling because people were pirating the music or buying it in different forms. Anyone with two eyes could see that. The old business model had to go. But these very same executives who seemed so sharp were afraid to confront this reality. They held on tightly to the past and would bring everyone down with them, not 50. He would avoid this fate by moving in a different direction. He would forge a diversified business empire, music merely being a tool to get there. his decision would be based on his intense reading of the changing environment that he had detected in music but was affecting all levels of business. Let others depend on their MBAs, their money, and their connections. Instead, he would rely upon that hustler's eye that brought him from the bottom of America to the top in just a few short years. So now what we're going to do is we're going to play an excerpt from the 50th Law. And I want you guys to check this out. Call in, share your questions or comments. Call in numbers 347-308-8527. Once again, the call in number is 347-308-8527. It's your name, S-Dot. We'll be back in a minute.
Chapter 1. See things for what they are, intense realism. Reality can be rather harsh. Your days are numbered. It takes constant effort to carve a place for yourself in this ruthlessly competitive world and hold on to it. People can be treacherous. They bring endless battles into your life. Your task is to resist the temptation to wish you were all different. Instead, you must fearlessly accept these circumstances, even embrace them. By focusing your attention on what is going on around you, you will gain a sharp appreciation for what makes some people advance and others fall behind. By seeing through people's manipulations, you can turn them around. The firmer your grasp on reality, the more power you will have to alter it for your purposes.
The greatest danger you face is your mind growing soft and your eye getting dull. When things get tough and you grow tired of the grind, your mind tends to drift into fantasies. You wish things were a certain way, and slowly, subtly, you turn inward to your thoughts and desires. If things are going well, you become complacent, imagining that what you have now will continue forever. You stop paying attention. Before you know it, you end up overwhelmed by the changes going on and the younger people rising up around you, challenging your position. Think of reality in the following terms. The people around you are generally mysterious. You are never quite sure about their intentions. They present an appearance that is often deceptive. Their manipulative actions don't match their lofty words or promises. All of this can prove confusing. Seeing people as they are, instead of what you think they should be, would mean having a greater sense of their motives. It would mean being able to pierce the facade they present to the world and see their true character. Your actions in life would be so much more effective with this knowledge. Your line of work is another layer of reality. Right now, things might seem calm on the surface, but there are changes rippling through that world. Dangers are looming on the horizon. People can be full of book knowledge and crammed with information, but have no real sense of what's going on around them. It is, in fact, a function of character and fearlessness. Simply put, realists are not afraid to look at the harsh circumstances of life. They sharpen their eye by paying keen attention to details, to people's intentions, to the dark realities hiding behind any glamorous surface. Like any muscle that is trained, they develop the capacity to see with more intensity. It is simply a choice you have to make. At any moment in life, you can convert to realism, which is not a belief system at all, but a way of looking at the world. It means every circumstance, every individual is different, and your task is to measure that difference, then take appropriate action. Your eyes are fixed on the world, not on yourself or your ego. What you see determines what you think and how you act. The moment you believe in some cherished idea that you will hold on to, no matter what your eyes and ears reveal to you, you are no longer a realist. It might seem that seeing so much of reality could make one depressed, but the opposite is the case. Having clarity about where you are headed, what people are up to, and what is happening in the world around you will translate into confidence and power, a sensation of lightness. You will feel more connected to your environment, like a spider on its web. Whenever things go wrong in life, you will be able to right yourself faster than others, because you will quickly see what is really going on and how you can exploit even the worst moment. And once you taste this power, you will find more satisfaction from an intense absorption in reality than from indulging in any kind of fantasy. Reality came to be seen as something to avoid. Secretly and slowly, we developed a taste for escape from our problems, from work, from the harshness of life. Our culture began to manufacture endless fantasies for us to consume. And fed on such illusions, we became easier to deceive, since we no longer had a mental barometer for distinguishing fact from fiction. You were born with the greatest weapon in all of nature, the rational conscious mind. It has the power to expand your vision far and wide, giving you the unique capacity to distinguish patterns in events, learn from the past, glimpse into the future, see through appearances. Circumstances are conspiring to dull that weapon and render it useless by turning you inward and making you afraid of reality. Consider it war. You must fight this tendency as best you can and move in the opposite direction. You must turn outward and become a keen observer of all that is around you. You are doing battle against all the fantasies that are thrown at you. You are tightening your connection to the environment. You want clarity, not escape and confusion. Moving in this direction will instantly bring you power among so many dreamers. Regard the following as exercises for your mind, to make it less rigid, more penetrating and expansive, a sharper gauge of reality. Practice all of them as often as you can. This position of basic ignorance was what you had as a child. You had a need and hunger for knowledge to overcome this ignorance, so you observed the world as closely as possible, absorbing large amounts of information. Everything was a source of wonder. With time, our minds tend to close off. At some point, we feel like we know what we need to know. Our opinions are certain and firm. We do this out of fear. We don't want our assumptions about life challenged. If we go too far in this direction, we can become extremely defensive and cover up our fears by acting with supreme confidence and certainty. What you need to do in life is return to that mind you possessed as a child, opening up to experience instead of closing it off. Just imagine for a day that you do not know anything, that what you believe could be completely false. Let go of your preconceptions and even your most cherished beliefs. Experiment. Force yourself to hold the opposite opinion or see the world through your enemy's eyes. Listen to the people around you with more attentiveness. See everything as a source for education, even the most banal encounters. Imagine that the world is still full of mystery. When you operate this way, you will notice that something strange often happens. Opportunities will begin to fall into your lap because you are suddenly more receptive to them. Sometimes luck or serendipity is more a function of the openness of your mind. You want to take in as much as possible with your own eyes. You communicate with people up and down the chain of command within your organization. You do not draw any barriers to your social interactions. You want to expand your access to different ideas. Force yourself to go to events and places that are beyond your usual circle. If you cannot observe something firsthand, try to get reports that are more direct and less filtered, or vary the sources so that you can see things from several sides. Get a fingertip feel for everything going on in your environment, the complete terrain. Look at people's deeds, not words. Sharpness. In war, or any competitive game, you don't pay attention to people's good or bad intentions. They don't matter. It should be the same in the game of life. Everyone is playing to win, and some people will use moral justifications to advance their side. All you look at are people's maneuvers, their actions in the past, and what you might expect in the future. In this area, you are fiercely realistic. You understand that everyone is after power, and that to get it, we all occasionally manipulate and even deceive. That is human nature, and there is no shame in it. You don't take people's maneuvers personally. You merely try to defend or advance yourself. As part of this approach, you must become a better observer of people. This cannot be done on the internet. It must be honed in personal interactions. You are trying to read people, see through them as best you can. You come to understand, for instance, that a person who is too obviously friendly after too short a time is often up to no good. If they flatter you, it is generally out of envy. Behavior that stands out and seems excessive is a sign. Don't get caught up in people's grand gestures, in the public face they put on. Pay more attention to the details, to the little things they reveal in their day-to-day lives. Their decisions reveal a lot, and you can often discern a pattern if you look at them closely. In general, looking at people through the lens of your emotions will cloud what you see and make you misunderstand everything. What you want is a sharp eye towards your fellow humans, one that is piercing, objective, and non-judgmental. Your increasing powers of observation must occasionally be aimed at yourself. Think of this as a ritual you will engage in every few weeks, a rigorous reassessment of who you are and where you are headed. Look at your most recent actions as if they were the maneuvers of another person. Imagine how you could have done it all better, avoided unnecessary battles, or confronted people who stood in your way instead of running away from them. The goal here is not to beat up on yourself, but to have the capacity to adapt and change your behavior by moving closer to the reality. The end game of such an exercise is to cultivate the proper sense of detachment from yourself and from life. It is not that you want to feel this detachment at every moment. There are times that require you to act with heart and boldness, without doubts or self-distance. On many occasions, however, you need to be able to assess what is happening, without your ego or emotions coloring your perceptions. Moving to a calm, detached inner position to observe events will become a habit and something you can rely on amid any crisis. At those moments in life when others lose their balance, you will find yours with relative ease. As a person who cannot be easily ruffled by events, you will attract attention and power.
That's from chapter one. James Baldwin once said, "People who cling to their delusions find it difficult, if not impossible, to learn anything worth learning. And people under the necessity of creating themselves must examine everything and soak up learning the way the roots of a tree soak up water." Shaman Estat will be back in a minute.
Ladies and gentlemen, stand the fuck up. God damn it! Let this shit knock. I done turned Havana to Atlanta. Why I've ever shirts and bandanas. Every time you think they got me, I switch the planner. Bulletproof this radio scanner. Ballin' to they banners. You getting too much bread, they try to jam you. Boy from the hood, but got White House clamors. Sorry, y'all, I don't agree with y'all parents. Politician never did shit for me. Except lie to me, distort history. Wanna give me jail time and a fine? Fine, let me commit a real crime. I might buy a kilo for GP. Out of spite, I just might flood these streets. Hear the freedom in my speech, got an onion from Universal, read it and weep. Would've bought the Nets to Brooklyn for free, except I made millions off of you fucking dweeb. I
still own the building, I'm still keeping my seat. Y'all buy that bullshit, y'all better keep y'all receipts. Obama said, chill, you gon' get me impeached. You don't need this shit anyway, chill with me on the beach.
Y'all gon' learn today.
My man went to Cuba, caught in a political triangle, Bermuda. The same way they said she was a shooter. Aside from Shakur, they tried to execute her. I went to Cuba to see her. We should free her like we should Mumia. Can't a nigga rap and make movies. Y'all seen that Fox News tried to do me. They say I'm too black, like it's lights out. Might not get invited back to the White House. Still with the Obamas I ride. I meet the president on the south side. March the streets, parade for peace. Shorties keep shooting, they need a release. Trying to eat in the belly of the beast. I call on LeBron, they carry in the heat. Y'all gon' learn today. Like you're listening to Malcolm and MLK. Media saying shit that ain't there. But we fall down and get back up. Kevin Ware, it's so political. I don't trust niggas. When it come to revolution, it's just us, nigga.
Y'all gon' learn today.
We almost want to start a revolution. You know whenever I'm threatened, I start shooting. Catch your body, head to Houston. I'm in Cuba, I love Cubans. This communist talk is so confusing. When it's from China, the very mic of the music. Idiot win, the Bob Dylan, the rap music. You're an idiot, baby, you should become a student. Or you gon' learn today.
Y'all gon' learn today.
Where the fuck have you been? Woo! The world's under new management. The new role model, fuck this Zoolander shit.
Knowledge,
y'all gonna be today.
Go now, run along and tell your Xerxes he faces free men here, not slaves.
No, not slaves. Your women will be slaves. By noon this day, you will be dead men. 1,000 nations of the Persian Empire descend upon you. Our arrows will blot out the sun.
Then we will fight in the shade.
What's good? So, as you heard, two versions of Open Letter, Jay-Z. And this is what I'm talking about, turning lemons into lemonade. First version, Jay-Z, released earlier this week. A day or two later, Jay-Z and Common. Same song. So, we're going to be back in a minute. I want you to check out this Anthony Hamilton, The Change Won't Come.
I was born by the river in a little tent in wood. Like the river, I've been running ever since. It's been a long, long time coming, but I know change gon' come. Oh, yes, well. It's been too hard to live, but I'm afraid to die. 'Cause I don't know what's up there beyond the sky. It's been a long time coming. But I know a change gon' come. Oh, yes, well. See, I go to the movie, and then I go downtown. to hang around. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change don't come. Oh, yes, it will. Then I go to my brother. I said, brother, oh my brother, help me please. Give me wine, girl, knocking me. Oh, keep knocking me. Keep knocking me back. Down on my knees. And whoa, that was time when I thought I wouldn't last for long. But now I think I'm able to carry on. It's been a long, long time coming, but I know a change gon' come. Oh, yes, it did.
What's good, people? It's your man, S-Dot, back from Real Talk University. We're going to take another brief break, and we'll be back in a minute. It's your man, S-Dot.
Yeah. remained in Cuba as a socialist en quittant, but I didn't see any difference in being a socialist en quittant than in being an en quittant in capitalist and racist America. And I'm not cut out to be an en quittant no matter who is from. Now.
All right. Shout out to Mary J. Blige. I'm going to move on to chapter 2. Make everything your own self-reliance. And for this chapter, we're actually going to play the clip, and I'm going to do a follow-up episode in which I'm able to elaborate. Got a lot of things going on right now, so I want to play this clip to allow folks to be able to benefit from it, to, you know, think about these things, let them marinate, and we're going to elaborate on them afterwards. It's your man, Esther.
Chapter 2, Making Everything Your Own, Self-Reliance. When you work for others, you are at their mercy. They own your work. They own you. Your creative spirit is squashed. What keeps you in such positions is a fear of having to sink or swim on your own. Instead, you should have a greater fear of what will happen to you if you remain dependent on others for power. Your goal in every maneuver in life must be ownership, working the corner for yourself. When it's yours to lose. You're more motivated, more creative, more alive. The ultimate power in life is to be completely self-reliant, completely yourself.
You came into this life with the only real possessions that ever matter. Your body, the time that you have to live, your energy, the thoughts and ideas unique to you, and your autonomy. But over the years, you tend to give all of this away. You spend years working for others. They own you during that period. You get needlessly caught up in people's games and battles, wasting energy and time that you will never get back. You come to respect your own ideas less and less, listening to experts, conforming to conventional opinions. Without realizing it, you squander your independence. Everything that makes you a creative individual. Before it is too late, you must reassess your entire concept of ownership. It is not about possessing things or money or titles. You can have all of that in abundance, but if you are someone who still looks to others for help and guidance, if you depend on your money or resources, then you will eventually lose what you have when people let you down, adversity strikes, or you reach for some foolish scheme out of impatience. True ownership can come only from within. It comes from a disdain for anything or anybody that impinges upon your mobility, from a confidence in your own decisions, and from the use of your time in constant pursuit of education and improvement. Only from this inner position of strength and self-reliance will you be able to truly work for yourself and never turn back. If situations arise in which you must take in partners or fit within another organization, you are mentally preparing yourself for the moment when you will move beyond these momentary entanglements. If you do not own yourself first, you will continually be at the mercy of people and circumstance, looking outward instead of relying on yourself and your wits. Understand, we are living through an entrepreneurial revolution, comparable to the one that swept through 50's neighborhood in the 1980s, but on a global scale. The old power centers are breaking up. Individuals everywhere want more control over their destiny and have much less respect for an authority that is not based on merit, but on mere power. We have all naturally come to question why someone should rule over us, why our source of information should depend on the mainstream media, and on and on. We do not accept what we accepted in the past. Where we are naturally headed with all of this is the right and capacity to run our own enterprise, in whatever shape or form, to experience that freedom. We are all corner hustlers in a new economic environment, and to thrive in it, we must cultivate the kind of self-reliance that helped push 50 past all of the dangerous dependencies that threatened him along the way. It is harder for us to realize that we are essentially alone in this world. Everyone in the world is governed by self-interest. People naturally think first of themselves and their agendas. An occasional affectionate or helpful gesture from people you know tends to cloud this reality and make you expect more of this support until you are disappointed again and again. You are more alone than you imagine. This should not be a source of fear, but of freedom. When you prove to yourself that you can get things on your own, then you experience a sense of liberation. You are no longer waiting for people to do this or that for you, a frustrating and infuriating experience. You have confidence that you can manage any adverse situation on your own. Think of it this way. Dependency is a habit that is so easy to acquire. We live in a culture that offers you all kinds of crutches, experts to turn to, drugs to cure any psychological unease, mild pleasures to help pass or kill time, jobs to keep you just above water. It is hard to resist. But once you give in, it is like a prison you enter that you cannot ever leave. You continually look outward for help, and this severely limits your options and maneuverability. When the time comes, as it inevitably does, when you must make an important decision, you have nothing inside of yourself to depend on. For most of us, the critical terrain in this war is the work world. Most of us enter adult life with great ambitions for how we will start our own ventures, but the harshness of life wears us down. We settle into some job and slowly give in to the illusion that our bosses care about us and our future, that they spend time thinking of our welfare. We forget the essential truth that all humans are governed by self-interest. Our bosses keep us around out of need, not affection. They will get rid of us the moment that need is less acute, or they find someone younger and less expensive to replace us. Time is the critical factor in our lives, our most precious resource. The problem when we work for others is that so much of this becomes dead time that we want to pass as quickly as possible, time that is not our own. Almost all of us must begin our careers working for others, but it is always within our power to transform this time from something dead to something alive. If we make the same determination as Vanderbilt, to be an owner and not a minion, then that time is used to learn as much as we can about what is going on around us, the political games, the nuts and bolts of this particular venture, the larger game going on in the business world, how we could do things better. We have to pay attention and absorb as much information as possible. This helps us endure work that does not seem so rewarding. In this way, we own our time and our ideas before owning a business. While still working for others, your goal at some point must be to carve out little areas that you can operate on your own, cultivating entrepreneurial skills. This could mean offering to take over projects that others have left undone, or proposing to put into action some new idea of your own, but nothing too grandiose to raise suspicion. What you are doing is cultivating a taste for doing things yourself, making your own decisions, learning from your own mistakes. If your bosses do not allow you to make such a move on any scale, then you are not in the right place. If you fail in this venture, then you have gained a valuable education. But generally, taking on such things on your own initiative forces you to work harder and better. You are more creative and motivated because there is more at stake. You rise to the challenge. Keep in mind the following. What you really value in life is ownership, not money. If ever there is a choice, more money or more responsibility, you must always opt for the latter. A lower-paying position that offers more room to make decisions and carve out little empires is infinitely preferable to something that pays well but constricts your movements. Your goal in life must be to always move higher and higher up the food chain, where you alone control the direction of your enterprise and depend on no one. Since this goal is a future ideal, In the present, you must strive to keep yourself free of unnecessary entanglements and alliances. And if you cannot avoid having partners, make sure that you are clear as to what function they serve for you and how you will free yourself of them at the right moment. You must remember that when people give you things or do you favors, it is always with strings attached. They want something from you in return: assistance, unquestioned loyalty, and so forth. You want to keep yourself free of as many of these obligations as possible. So get in the habit of taking what you need for yourself instead of expecting others to give it to you. Make your enterprise a reflection of your individuality. Understand, you are one of a kind. Your character traits are a kind of chemical mix that will never be repeated in history. There are ideas unique to you, a specific rhythm and perspective that are your strengths, not your weaknesses. You must not be afraid of your uniqueness, and you must care less and less what people think of you. This uniqueness that you express is not anything wild or too strange. That is an affectation in itself. People are rarely that different. Rather, you are being yourself as far as you can take that. The world cannot help but respond to such authenticity. People who are self-sufficient are generally types who are more comfortable with themselves. They do not look for things that they need from other people. Paradoxically, this makes them more attractive and seductive. We wish we could be more like that and want to be around them, hoping that some of their independence might rub off on us. The needy, clingy types, often the most sociable, unconsciously push us away. We feel their need for comfort and validation, and secretly we want to say to them, "Get it for yourself. Stop being so weak and dependent."
I agree. One of the things that I oftentimes tell young people in my workshops on entrepreneurship is that my mouth doesn't lead to your stomach. My hands don't tie your shoelaces. The person that's most responsible for you is you. A lot of people overlook this undeniable, unavoidable truth. They stand around waiting for others to make decisions that they will agree to. Then they become bitter and build up resentment against those who show and take the initiative in life. And eventually, jealousy and envy begin to cloud their vision, or their lack of vision. And they close eyes, stare at their eyelids, fixated on their dreams. And when they open them, it's obvious. Changes come, but they have remained the same. They're stuck. They're shook. They're scared to death to look in the mirror of truth. Sound familiar? I know a lot of you are dreamers, but a dreamer must wake up. You can't rise to meet and defeat a challenge with closed eyes. The dreamer must open their eyes to become a visionary. Visionary shows discipline in doing, determination in pursuing, and due diligence in renewing their skills set as needed. They have to turn their, they might have tunnel vision, but they also remain mindful while they're in the tunnel. You know, it's exciting to know that you're on the road to riches, but it's unwise to travel without a roadmap, a spare tire, and others just in case of an emergency necessity. So a lot of folks oftentimes find themselves caught up in situations where other folks are controlling their destiny and they're very frustrated. This is particularly true of folks who are 35 years old and older, folks who may have, whatever circumstance they've gone through, may have gone the school route, gone the vocational route, done what they consider to be all the right things, but now they find themselves 35 plus years old, and they're in middle management, and because of the so-called economic conditions that are existing right now, the so-called recession, these folks now find themselves in vocational experiences that on a day-to-day basis stress them out. they now find themselves stuck to a mortgage, a car payment, rent, child care expenses, and things of this nature. And as a result of it, a lot of these folks who are 35-plus years old are very bitter, very angry. And you see this anger and bitterness turn towards young people, particularly with a lot of people who are 35-plus years old, their disdain for a lot of young people, whether it be for their music, it be for their fashion, it just be for young people in general. One of the things that I've decided is that I have come to the realization that for me, I don't speak for other people, but for me, I don't feel that at this juncture in my life, that my life's work is to be focused on individuals who are 35-plus years old who aren't proactively seeking to liberate themselves from whatever their circumstances are. I decided that it is better for me to concentrate and focus my energy on the up-next generation. A lot of these old dogs don't want to learn any new tricks, and I don't really have a lot of time to spend or misspend debating with folks about topics that many of them aren't going to change their minds about for various reasons. I used to do all of that circular dialogue with folks discussing everything from their theological, religious perspective, from their socio-political perspectives, and I've come to the point to recognize at this point in my life that many folks, wherever they are in life, you know, that's just where they are. And you have to meet folks where they are, but if you meet them someplace and it's obvious that they don't desire to move beyond that place, then sometimes you have to leave them exactly where they are and just keep it moving. You know, I have this acronym that I oftentimes use, harness. And I think about earlier in life, you know, I thought that I was giving folks a harness by trying to help them. And HARNESS is an acronym for Help All Rejected Niggas Experience Some Success. But one of the things that you notice about a harness is a harness doesn't just keep you in line, it also keeps you confined. You know, sometimes what you perceive as help is actually harm. And HARM is another acronym that I use for Hinder Attitude Readjustment Method, because sometimes you can hinder another person's growth and approach to life by, you know, not giving them an opportunity to pull themselves up by their own proverbial bootstraps. I want to go back to chapter 2 and read through some stuff that I don't think that they covered in the audio portion, and then we're going to go on to chapter 3. So chapter 2 is Make Everything Your Own, Self-Reliance. And it says, after serving a short sentence in a Brooklyn rehabilitation program for his first offense as a drug dealer, Curtis Jackson returned to the streets virtually back at square one. The money he had earned the previous few years as a corner hustler was all gone, and his once loyal customers had all found other dealers to buy from. A friend, now running a fairly large crack cocaine operation, offered Curtis a job bagging up drugs. He would be paid a daily wage, and not a bad one. Curtis desperately needed the money, so he accepted the offer. Perhaps further down the road, his friend would cut him in on some of the action, and he could reestablish his own business. But from the first day on the job, he realized that this was all in mistake. He was working with a group of other baggers, all former dealers. They were now hired help. They had to show up at a certain time and bow down to the authority of the employers. Curtis had lost not only his money, but also his freedom. This new position went against all of the survival lessons he had learned up till then in his short life. Curtis had never known his father, and his mother had been murdered when he was 8 years old. His grandparents had essentially raised him. They were loving and kind, but they had a lot of children to look after and not much time to give individual attention. If he wanted any kind of guidance or advice, there was nobody in his life to turn to. At the same time, if he wanted anything new, such as clothes, he did not feel comfortable asking his grandparents. They did not have much money. What all of this meant was that he was essentially alone in the world, in this world. He could not rely on anyone to give him anything. He would have to fend for himself. When crack cocaine exploded on the streets in the mid-1980s, and everything changed in the neighborhoods like his. In the past, large gangs controlled the drug business, and to be involved, you had to fit into their structure and spend years moving up the ladder. But crack was so easy to manufacture, and the demand was so high that anyone, no matter how young, could get into the game without any startup capital. You could work on your own and make good money. For those like Curtis who grew up with little parental supervision and disdain for authority, being a corner dealer was the perfect fit. No political games, no bosses above you, and so he quickly joined the growing pool of hustlers dealing crack on the streets of Southside Queens. As he got further into the game, he learned a fundamental lesson. There were endless problems and dangers confronting a street hustler. Undercover cops, fiends, and rival dealers scheming to rob you. If you were weak, you looked for others to help you or for some crutch to lean on, such as drugs or alcohol. This was the path of doom. Eventually, your friend would not show up as promised, or your mind would be too clouded by drugs to see someone's treachery. The only way to survive was to admit you were on your own. Learn to make your own decisions and trust your judgment. Do not ask for what you need, but take it. Let me read that again. Do not ask for what you need, but take it. Depend only on your wits. It was as if a hustler, born amid squalor and cramped quarters, possessed an empire. This was not something physical. The corner that he worked or the neighborhood he wanted to take over, it was his time, his energy, his creative schemes, his freedom to move where he wanted to. If he kept command of that empire, he would make money and thrive. If he looked for help, if he got caught up in other people's political games, if he gave all of that away, in such a case, the negative conditions of the hood would be magnified, and he would end up a beggar, a pawn in someone else's game. As he sat there bagging drugs that first day, Curtis realized that this went far beyond a monetary lull in his life, in which he needed some quick money. This was a turning point. He looked at the other backers. They all suffered downturns in fortunes, violence, prison time, etc. They had become scarred and tired, scared and tired of the grind. They wanted the comfort and security of a paycheck, and this would become the pattern for the rest of their lives. Afraid of life challenges, they would come to depend on other people to help them. Perhaps they could go on like this for several years. But the day of reckoning would come when there would be no more jobs and they had forgotten how to fend for themselves. It was ludicrous for Curtis to imagine that the man now employing him to bag would someday help him to set up shop. Bosses don't do things like that. Even if they're your friends, they think of themselves and they use you. He had to get out now, before that empire slipped from his hands and he became yet another former hustler dependent on favors. He quickly went into full hustling mode and figured his way out of the trap. At the end of the day, he made a deal with the baggers. He would dole out the daily cash he had been paid for the job to all of them. In return, he would teach them how to put less crack in each capsule, but make it look full. He had been doing this on the street for years. They were then to give Curtis the extra crack that was left over from each capsule. Within a week, he had accumulated enough drugs to return to hustling on the streets on his terms. After that, he swore to himself he would never work for another person ever again. He would rather die. Years later, Curtis, now known as 50 Cent, had managed to segue into a music career. After a fierce mixtape campaign on the streets of New York, in which he became a local celebrity, he gained the attention of Eminem, who helped sign him to a lucrative deal on his own label within Interscope Records. For the launch of his debut album, Get Rich or Die Trying, there was a lot of work to do, a marketing campaign, videos, artwork. So he went to Los Angeles to work with Interscope on these projects. But the more time he spent in their cushy offices, the more he had a feeling that he was at yet another turning point in his life. The game these music executives were playing was simple. They owned your music and a lot more. They wanted to package the artist in their way, and this dictated all of the key decisions on the music videos and publicity. In return, they lavished you with money and perks. They created a feeling of dependence. Without the massive machine behind you, you were helpless in the face of a viciously competitive business. In essence, you were exchanging money for freedom. And once you internally succumbed to their logic and their money, you were finished. You were a high-paid bagger doing a job. And so, as before, 50 went into full hustling mode to reclaim his empire. In the short term, he schemed to shoot his own videos with his own money and come up with his own marketing schemes. To Interscope, it seemed like he was saving them time and resources. But to 50, it was a subtle way to regain control over his image. He set up a record label for his own stable of artists from within Interscope, and he used this label to teach himself all aspects of production. He created his own website where he could experiment with new ways to market his music. He turned the dependence dynamic around, using Interscope as a school for teaching him how to run things on his own. All of this was part of the end game he had in mind. He would run out his contract with Interscope, and instead of renegotiating a new one, he would proclaim his independence and be the first artist to set up his own freestanding record label. From such a position of power, he would have no more executives to please, and he could expand his empire on his own terms. It would be just like the freedom he had experienced on the street, but on a global level. So that's from chapter two. We're coming down to about 9 minutes in the show. My excerpt from chapter three is about 11 minutes, so it's longer than the time that we have for today's show. I hope that some of what we shared in today's show is some jewels of wisdom that you can take with you on your journey to success wherever you are in love and life. You're able to benefit from that. As a person who personally was involved in the mixtape marketing campaign of G-Unit, I can tell you that as a machine and as an individual who built a machine, that Curtis 50 Cent Jackson is absolutely a street marketing genius. As many of you know, who know my history in the music industry, much of those G-Unit mixtapes, practically all of the Who Kid mixtape CDs were designed by my crew, my creative crew. Shout out to my man No Joe Designs, designed all of the graphics for all of those mixtape covers. Shout out to LICC Printing and Graphics of Brooklyn. We printed all of those mixtape covers. Shout out to Party Zone. We distributed much of those mixtapes. We also did a lot of co-marketing ventures with G-Unit, particularly with Who Kid, to build the G-Unit brand. And we did our part by way of getting the word out there for their Reebok campaign and things of that nature. And just seeing where he has come as a businessman today continues to inspire me, because I know that I played a part of that, and it's significant to me, and it's something that I really appreciate having been a part of. That being said, ultimately, the person most responsible for his success is the individual, not myself or not any of the other individuals that I mentioned, but just being able to be a part of that team effort was a great experience. So what I tell young people is find your hustle, whatever your hustle is. You may apply the business model of another industry to your particular product or service, whatever your product or service may be, but find your hustle and be innovative at it. but more so than anything else, is inject your personality in it. Because once you inject your personality, your individualism in it, you'll never be playing, there won't be any competition, because the competition is yourself. You won't be playing catch-up. One of the reasons why you see such labels like Bad Boy and with P. Diddy or Rockefeller with Jay-Z or G-Unit with 50 Cent, well, the reason why these particular movements were successful for these individuals is because the individuals behind it infused their personality in that, so that therefore you couldn't get the Bad Boy, the Rockefeller, or the G-Units now with any other label but those particular labels. If you wanted that type of music, you had to go to the source. So that's what you need to look at in terms of your own individual venture. Whatever your venture is, I tell a lot of young people right now, you know, an older person said to me a few years ago, you know, in a drought, you can either pray for rain or sell water. So a lot of the young people right now find themselves in situations where they're in an economic drought. So in this drought, you've got to be innovative. Sell water. You might go to Costco's or BJ's or whatever big retail wholesaler that you have in your particular town, and they may sell a case of 48 bottles of water, 16-ounce bottles or 12-ounce bottles of water. They may sell that for about $12 to $16. You may invest and get yourself a case of 48, and maybe you may buy yourself two cases of them, and you sell those waters at a dollar each. And you may put them in the freezer at night or in the morning in a deep freezer, get up and go about 3 or 4 hours away so that the waters are melting by that time to a beach or wherever, and you're selling those particular first 48 waters there. And then maybe you have to come back to your home or wherever you have your waters at and get your next case of 48 waters and go to another location that's even closer to you. If you're a young person who's on the subway, seen a young brother yesterday, I commended him because many of you know that I started a lot of young people on the subway selling snacks on the subway for a dollar, M&Ms and things of that nature. And many of you in New York, you hear a lot of them get on the train and give you their sales pitch. I'm grateful to three young people in particular. I'm not going to say their names. They're all brothers and sisters, and I helped them develop their sales pitch years ago, which has since been adopted by a lot of other young people. And their sales pitch was, "Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is S. Dot. I'm selling today M&M's, Skittles, whatever. Each of them is for a dollar. I'm not selling them for a basketball team or any other charity. I'm trying to keep it real. I'm trying to make some money in my pocket. I'm trying to stay out of trouble." This would bring a smile to the face of older people because they would say, wow, this young person isn't trying to hustle me about please give me a donation for a basketball team and so forth. And then there's the comedy aspect of them saying, I'm trying to keep it real. I'm trying to get some money in my pocket. And any person can respect that. And oftentimes you would have older people who 9 times out of 10 didn't even want to purchase anything, but the fact that these young people were going above and beyond to do something, they would purchase from them. Well, when I saw this young brother yesterday, not only was he doing the same hustle, he took it to the next level and said, I recognize some of you may not want sweets with high fructose corn syrup, and therefore I have granola bars, I have these type of bars, things that were more health conscious, he said. I even have bananas and oranges. And it was like so innovative, and so many people bought his stuff that by the time he left that particular car, he made at least $40 in sales in that particular car. So find whatever your hustle is and get it how you want to live it. It's your man, S. Dot. Send us an email at thesdotfiles@gmail.com. That's THESDOTFILES@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter /the S.files or on Facebook /the S.files. We're going to be back, Real Talk University. We got our 9 chapters in the book. We did chapter 1, chapter 2 today. We've got a number of chapters to go. I just want you to see about the remix culture of hip-hop. Take a shit and turn it into sugar. Jay-Z came out with Open Letter. A day or two later, you had Common come out with a different version of it. And then finally, you got Wyclef Jean with another version of it. So that's the spirit of hip-hop. Also, we want to say happy birthday to Kool Herc, who celebrated his 58th birthday this week. The father of hip-hop, shout-out to Kool Herc, celebrated his birthday on August 16th. So until next episode, it's your man, S. Dot. Be prosperous.
Action Ship told me finish that Chewy Susqua. Okay,
turn up my guitar.
First hip-hop guitar.
Oh, y'all gonna learn.
God damn it! I found my balance again. Why Clef the General? Turn up. Hip-hop guitarist. Stay on my Jimi Hendrix. If Tennisaw was here, he'd say, ticka ticka taka my goalie. She lay next to the gentleman. Sometime Glock 9, sometime Act 10. Turn me up whenever she lit. She sing a sweet song, ka 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 kaleo. Hey, it's time to teach them, bro. Hey, they got to learn, bro. Real talk, Jay. I was with Bill Clinton on an Air Force One headed down to my island. I'm the one they boarded when they wanted to keep the peace. United Nation, oh, the gangs would listen to me. Brad Pitt, Angelina Jolie bought them out to Haiti. This is before the earthquakes on your TV. Used to go to D.C., see Nancy Pelosi. I spoke in front of Congress, fighting for my country. But once I decided that I'ma run for president, my whole life changed in a split second. Now I understand the hidden owl on the dollar. They'll never let a nigga have the power. In the final hour, I'm with Wolf Blitzer on CNN. Then felt my constitution got twisted with Sean Penn. Even my bandmate said I wasn't fit, but I could see the future. Nostradamus, they took me out the race and said I had no residence. But I'm so powerful, I made my man a president. Lost 20 mil when I decided to run. But I'ma make it all back with my next album. Who God bless, man, no man can curse. How worse can it get, man, I used to eat dirt. Dirt, dirt, dirt. Hip-hop guitarist, stay on my Jimi Hendrix. In the hood, they used to call me the baddest with a Venezuelan flow. Hugo Chavez. Anything I say now gotta make sense. Cause I be gone with the wind. Now I understand the mathematics of the one when they say there's nothing new under the sun. Ain't no Illuminati here, they just trying to scare you here. Cause if we ever join forces, we be nuclear. I made the labels rich, now it's time to build an empire. Then I'ma retire, cause even the Pope gets tired. They call me General, cannons at your walls. Two kings can't reign, one gotta fall. And that's Rome for ya, that's the streets for ya. Everybody got a set of goons ready to get ya. And them same goons that's ready to kill for ya. 12 disciples, somebody Judah. Somebody snitching, giving information. Then it's immigration, then it's deportation. Back on the eye, this is more than a run-on sentence. My rap's a true life event. The General, man, I'm back with the info. Did you know a Haitian was the founder of Chicago? Jean Baptiste, if you want to Google search, and I put Haiti on the map. All y'all do is Google Earth.
From Haiti, landed on Flatbush. From Flatbush, moved to New Jersey. New Jerusalem, I'm talking Brick City. For many like me in the cemetery. From moving bricks in the Brick City. Brick City in the Brick City.
Jersey, I got facts. Swiss, I got facts.
I know you're out there. I can feel you now. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone And then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. I'm going to show them a world without you. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.